The designated hour having arrived, I call to order this special meeting of Ansel Klink's Quorum Forum podcast, the podcast Local Governments Need to Do Business. In the chair, it's me, Daniel J. Bolin. We have a special agenda item today, union do's and don'ts after Janus versus AFSCME. But first, let's take the roll. Our first guest is a labor and employment attorney at Ansel Klink. He focuses his practice on employment, insurance coverage, and business litigation. He watches the National Basketball Association, so we're going to ask him about it. Matt DiCiani is here.
Hey, Dan.
Matt, I know you go to a lot of Bulls games.
I do.
For me personally, the increasingly, because the Bulls have not been very interesting, has been the NBA offseason. That's been more interesting to me. And you're an NBA fan. What are your favorite offseason moves this year?
Well, I mean, the biggest move is LeBron to the Lakers, obviously. And they got a lot of other veterans around them. They got Rondo and some other guys. You know, they also have Brandon Ingram and Brooke Lopez. So I think the Lakers are probably the most interesting team. Obviously, Cousins going to the Warriors makes that basically an all-star team. But
right.
I think you got to put your money on the Warriors again. Although, I think the Lakers will give them a run.
You think the Lakers are going to make the playoffs?
Yeah, they'll definitely make the playoffs. They'll probably be the third seed, I think, in the West behind Golden State and Houston. So,
but you think the Warriors are going to take it all again?
I mean, I don't know how they wouldn't. If anything, they've gotten better. I mean, we'll see how Cousins' Achilles' heel ends up, but
The literal one, not the figurative one.
That's right. Yeah, his literally his Achilles tendon. But I think the Golden State's probably the team to beat.
All right, well, Matt's got the Warriors. Let's see what our callers think. Mike in Homewood. Mike, are you on the line? Oh, we lost Mike. I think we have to move on in any event. Behind the glass for our safety is Engineer Rick. He is present. We have a quorum. So, Matt, the real reason you're here is a recent Supreme Court case has got local governments talking about unions. And not all local governments have unions, so maybe start with some of the basics. What are unions? What do they do?
Sure. Well, Dan, just to reference that Supreme Court case you were talking about, that's Janus versus AFSCME. To answer your question about unions represent a group of employees in their negotiations with their employer. So a union will represent all of the police officers in their negotiations with their employer. So the union will negotiate on behalf of the employees for increased wages, more health insurance benefits, more time off, etc. Not all employees have to be represented by a union, and not all employers have to have unions in their workplace. In order for a union to exist, at least half of the employees need to be vote in favor of the union. So half of the police officers at a police department would need to vote in favor of a union. One thing to note is that at least in the public sector in Illinois, only one union can represent a group of employees. So say the police department of a certain town could not have some of their police officers represented by one union and some of their police officers represented by another union. All of the police officers have to be represented by just one union. Now, other jobs can be represented by another union. So the police officers could be represented by one union and the 911 dispatchers could be represented by another union. But all of the employees with the same job title, known as a bargaining unit, must be represented by the same union.
Oh, so like all the players in the NBA, half of them, 51% of or 50 plus one vote.
Yes,
they started a union years ago. Similar with the police officers and the different job categories, form different bargaining unions to start a union.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay, and so these unions, what are some of the activities that they do on behalf of their employees, and how do they fund it?
Sure. Well, as I mentioned before, the union's primary purpose is to negotiate better job conditions for their employees. So, again, higher wages, better health care, more time off, etc. One of the major things unions have done, though, is get involved in politics. In fact, unions are one of the biggest donors to political campaigns across the country. In the last election cycle, the election cycle that ended with the 2016 elections, unions donated more than $1 billion to campaigns across the country. So they're major political players. Historically, they've supported the Democrats, but that's changing. A lot of police unions are now supporting the Republicans. So they have an important role in politics, and that's what this Janus case was about, at least in part.
So this money comes from
union
dues?
Yes. So the money comes primarily from two sources. The main place the money comes from is union dues. So if you're going to be a member of the union, you need to contribute a certain amount of money each month to the union. And the union then uses that money to bargain on your behalf and engage in all of its activities. Now, in 22 different states in the country, unions were, employees who were represented by the union, who were in a particular bargaining unit but not actually members of the union, were required to pay something called agency fees or union shop fees, fair share fees. Basically, what this was a certain percentage of the union due. So, say I am a police officer and I'm not a member of the union, but the union is still going out and bargaining on my behalf. So they're bargaining with the employer to increase my wages, to increase my time off, increase my health care benefits. I would still be required to pay that union. And the purpose of this was to prevent free riders. So to prevent some people from having to pay for all of the work that the union does, while other people get the same amount of benefit from that work but don't have to pay for it.
And the United States Supreme Court previously indicated that these fair share fees were okay, right?
That's right, Dan. In a 1977 case called Abood versus the Detroit Board of Education, the U.S. Supreme Court held that fair share fees did not violate the Constitution. There was an argument made in that case that they violated the non-union members' First Amendment rights because they were being forced to pay these union dues. But the court rejected that argument and held that it was not a violation of their constitutional rights to be forced to pay union dues.
So I gather that a lot of public employers for a long time didn't enjoy the results of the Abood decision and went about trying to challenge it. How did those challenges kind of start?
Well, yes, you're right. Public employers were not crazy about the Abood decision, nor were many public employees, because a lot of people didn't want to be a member of the teachers' union, for example, or the Fraternal Order of Police. But even though they wouldn't join the union, they'd have to pay 80% of the cost of the union dues, and they wouldn't have the union represent them in grievances, or so there was a lot of unrest among employees and employers at the fair share issue. So the way that the Janus decision came about was Bruce Rauner, Governor Rauner, campaigned on his disagreements with agency fees, fair share fees. And a few weeks after he was inaugurated in February of that was 2015, he announced that he was no longer going to obey the state law that requires the state to collect fair share fees from public employees. So what Rahner did was he filed a lawsuit in federal court arguing that non-union member fees, agency fees, are unconstitutional and that he was not bound by state law to collect these fees. He also issued an executive order instructing state agencies not to collect fair share fees. Governor Rahner was actually dismissed from this lawsuit, but a couple public sector employees were allowed to remain in the lawsuit. Mark Janis was one of them, and that's who is the lead plaintiff in the case. Janice was a child support specialist for the Department of Child and Family Services, DCFS, and this was a union position. And Janice refused to join the union because of his opposition to many of the union's positions, yet he was still required to pay fair share fees. And he said that this was unconstitutional. This was a violation of his First Amendment rights. And the main crux of his argument was that everything the union does is inherently political. So say even the union is bargaining for more wages on your behalf. Well, that's a political decision because you're using taxpayer money to increase the amount of money that a certain group of employees is going to receive. So Janice said that it was impossible for union dues, for agency fees, not to be used for political activities. Yeah, I'm not sure if I mentioned this before, but one of the reasons that the Abood court said that agency fees could be constitutional is because they were not being used for political activities. So if I were to pay an agency fee to the union, that could only go for collective bargaining purposes. That couldn't go for lobbying or other political political activities. And Janice argued that that was impossible. All the money that the unions spent was inherently political.
Yeah, so that reduced amount, the fair share fee, which it sounded like sounds like a lot. It was 80%.
Yeah, exactly. Fair share fees are usually between 60% and 80% of the union.
But they're saying that last 20 was just for pure political purposes, and so this was constitutional under Abood. But really, they're saying that every decision is making a policy choice when they're arguing for different fees, different benefits, different what have you. Mm-hmm. So really, under Abood, these are political decisions, and so you really can't separate that out.
That's exactly right. That's what Janice's argument was. Janice filed suit, and his suit was actually dismissed by the district court. And it was also dismissed by the appellate court because they said, well, under Abood, right, this suit has no legs. I mean, the Supreme Court has ruled that agency fees are constitutional, so we're going to throw this suit out of court. But the Supreme Court held the opposite. They reversed the Abood decision, and they held, and this was Janice versus AFSCME, sent down at the end of June, that agency fees are unconstitutional. And they essentially agreed with Janice's argument. They held that the fair share fee provision violates the free speech rights of non-members by compelling them to subsidize private speech on matters of a substantial public concern. Essentially, they were saying that being compelled to pay union fees is a violation of your First Amendment rights. It's compelled speech. So a lot of people think about, you know, when most people think about the First Amendment, they say, oh, well, the First Amendment prohibits the government from preventing you from saying something. Well, the First Amendment also prohibits the government from forcing you to say something. And the Supreme Court held in Janus that requiring a employee to pay a union is requiring an employee to support the union speech. It's compelling speech. One of the interesting lines from the decision was essentially just stated that, no one would argue that it would be unconstitutional for the state to require you to support a certain political party, right? So if the government said, okay, you need to support the Republican Party, of course that'd be a violation of the First Amendment. And the Supreme Court stated in Janus that paying money to a union is essentially the same thing. I mean, it's essentially the same thing as being forced to support the Republican or the Democratic Party.
Right. Why is it okay in this context and not in any other context? Mm-hmm. It was kind of the court's point, I guess.
Yes, exactly. Another key holding in the Janus decision was that the court held that employers could not force their employees to opt out of union fee arrangements, to paying union fees. So a lot of collective bargaining agreements have they state that all members have to be part of the union, and then they can choose to opt out. Or the Supreme Court said that that was a violation of the First Amendment, and that in order to be a member of the union or to pay union fees, you have to opt in. So that's that was one thing that I think kind of got overlooked, but is important.
So this sounds like a big change in the law. And so what does it mean for local governments?
Well, local governments need to immediately stop collecting agency fees. In a lot of collective bargaining agreements, local governments are required to deduct agency fees or union fees from an employee's paycheck. Doing so now is a legal violation. It could subject them to a lawsuit. And even if the collective bargaining agreement has language in it that says that employers must collect union fees, they need to disregard that, because that language is now null and void, and it is a constitutional violation to require non-union members to pay the union. So I suggest that employers go through their payroll and find out who's a member of the union and who's not, and that they stop deducting fees from the paycheck of non-union members, and they do that immediately. And if employers have been deducting union fees from the paychecks of non-union members, if they've been deducting agency fees, they need to refund those fees after the Janus decision. So Janus came down on June 27th. So any money that they've deducted from non-union members since then needs to be refunded.
To the extent you still have it, you haven't turned it over to the union yet, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's very important to know. In these agreements, you mentioned this language about the requirement to collect it. I know that in a lot of agreements, there's severability language, and so if a court finds that some part of this agreement is unconstitutional, we're going to have to go back and talk about it. So do you have a duty to bargain over the subject of fair share fees if that subject's in your current CBA?
Actually, you do have a duty to bargain over it, but, I don't know if there's... Well, so, okay, it's a prohibited subject of negotiation, actually. Since the imposition of fair share fees is now unconstitutional, the subject of whether such fees can be charged or collected is now a prohibited subject of negotiation. A union can't make this practice lawful by negotiating it. So, you have no obligation to bargain over fair share agreements since it's not even legal. You know, you can't collectively bargain over things that are illegal.
Right. I think maybe it sounds like you might have an obligation to, depending on the language of your agreement, sit down and listen to whatever alternative language that they have to say or propose. But if that that language is requiring the payment of fair share, that's not something you've got to agree to.
Yeah. The point I was getting at is that Janus doesn't stop employers from having to collectively bargain with their employees. So under the Illinois Public Labor Relations Act, employers still have to collectively bargain with their unions. But Janus just makes collect fair share fees one of the subjects that doesn't have to be bargained over.
What are some other things local governments should be doing in light of the Janus decision?
Well, it's probably wise to send a notice to every union and every employee in a union, just notifying them that you will immediately stop withholding fair share fees. So just send a notice explaining what's going on to your employees. I'm sure there's a lot of confusion probably among employees. Employees don't really understand, or they might not understand what the decision held, and they might be confused as to why there's changes in their paychecks. Unions might be confused too. So I think it's worth it to just send a notice around explaining that. As I noticed before, as I said before, fair share fees that have been withheld should be refunded. And I think it's worth it to educate your existing and new employees on the law. Just one thing to be careful about is employers are prohibited from engaging in anti-union activities, from discouraging their employees from unionizing. So only provide facts about what happened. Don't say, oh, well, you know, this was a great idea and unions are terrible. And, you know, if you're going to join a union, then we're going to fire you. Nothing like that.
We can't do that.
Exactly. Just say the facts about what happened.
Do it in writing.
And do it in writing, of course, so people can't say, oh, well, you know, you said this or that. It's always good. One thing about employment law is documentation. Document everything. Dan, just one more thing I want to mention is that.
Sure.
We've heard that unions are trying to get around the Janus ruling. So apparently, one union proposed that we heard from someone we know that works in Park District, that a Park District CBA include the provision that the employer would only maintain the employment of union members. Obviously, you can't fire someone because they're not a member of a union. The point is, unions may try to get around the Janus decision. They may try to trick up employers. So, again, remember that unions are required to represent all employees in a bargaining unit, not just union members. So if only, 51% of a certain group of police officers is unionized, the union still has to negotiate on behalf of 100% of the police officers.
That's a good point. So are these former fair share payers, these non-members that were paying their fair share and they choose not to anymore, are they still covered by the CBA?
Yes, they're still covered by the CBA. They're still their rights are essentially unchanged, except for the fact that they don't have to pay union fees, or they don't have to pay agency fees.
And the union still is obligated to bargain on their behalf.
That's right. The union's still obligated to bargain on their behalf.
Okay. Any other thoughts or it sounds like unions are still deciding on how they're going to react or respond to this decision, and so kind of some of the questions to will continue to come up about this decision. But do you have any final thoughts or pieces of advice that local governments should be doing in response to this decision?
Yeah, you know, I'd take a look at our website, our labor and employment blog, the workplace report. You could just Google workplace report. We have a bunch of blog posts on there about the Janus decision and how employers should deal with it, certain things that unions are doing. So I would take a look at that. Feel free to contact your Anselk Link attorney or contact me, Matt DeCiani, mdeciani@anselklink, if you have questions about the Janus decision. The specifics of the decision will get worked out over the course of years in different court rulings and National Labor Relations Board rulings. But, right now, the main takeaway is don't collect agency fees.
That sounds like the most urgent thing. But it sounds like this is kind of changing the landscape for a lot of public employees and employers. That the old law was around since 1977. That's a long time ago. And if that landscape is changing radically and going forward, we're going to have to see how some of these issues are ironed out in terms of like what this means for the way that employer and employee speech means under Janus. I think both sides are, one side's going to continue to fight this decision, and the other side's going to try to fight to expand it in terms of like those speech rights in the workplace. I think it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, like you said, over the coming years. And the place to read about it is at workplacereport.anselklink.com.
That's right.
Perfect. Matt, can you stick around for some public comment? We've got it's a special meeting, so we have to have public comment before we go. So let's take a look at some of the questions that we get. The first one is, we have a resident who submits FOIA requests once a week. Most of them are for different records, but sometimes he asks for the same records we previously disclosed. I'm sure this is a familiar situation to many listeners. What can we do to reduce the burden of responding to so many requests?
Yeah, Dan, this is a tough one. I mean, there's no magic bullet. The more records your community places on its website, the more you can rely on that to avoid making copies. Section 8.5 of the Illinois Freedom of Information Act explains that you are not required to copy a public record that is published on your website so long as you provide clear directions on how to find it. For the repeated requests, that does provide some relief. Section 3G of the Act states that repeated requests from the same person for the same records that are unchanged or identical to records previously provided or properly denied under this act shall be deemed unduly burdensome. So that basically means if someone's sending the same FOIA over and over again, you're not required to produce it if it's just meant to harass.
I think that's a great tool. If the documents do exist on your website, it makes replying to these FOIA requests a lot easier. Relatively recent, in the past couple of years, change to the FOIA law, but it's a great tool that I've seen in more and more village clerks, city clerks, FOIA officers employing to make their FOIA compliance that much easier. Our next question is from Prodigy user Mayor E. Me. He says, I'm walking in my town's Labor Day parade and I need some advice. What's the best candy to throw to onlookers along the parade route? Matt, what do you think?
Well, my favorite candy was always Butterfinger, but that might not be good during a Labor Day parade. It might melt. I think you're going to want Jolly Rancher that can hit the ground and still stay fine.
That's pretty solid.
Yeah, so that's what I'd probably do.
Engineer Rick, what do you think?
Sour Heads.
Sour Heads? What is that? Sour Heads?
Little sour balls and whatever. I think they're called Sour Heads or something.
Sour Heads? My thought was Tootsie Rolls. Back in my days of walking parades, I think they're small, much like the Jolly Ranchers. That they're easy to throw.
Mm-hmm.
From my days working on political campaigns, they're relatively inexpensive. Which is important, save money in that campaign cash. There's not a lot of it. So that's my piece of advice. But the Tootsie Rolls, get the fresh ones. The stale ones are not very good. Hope that helps, Mr. Emy. The next segment is the Department of Public Works. Matt, do you got any plugs for upcoming publications, speeches, conferences? You've already mentioned the workplace report. People can find that. It's an email too, right?
Yes, we send around something called the workplace report update once a month, and that just provides some summaries of the important blog posts and some labor and employment issues that you should be aware of. So be on the lookout for that.
A good tip. As for me, on September 20th, I'll be speaking at the Illinois Municipal League Conference with my friend Greg Jones, battling billboard bullies, strategies for controlling outdoor advertising. And September 21st, at that same conference, Carrie Lynn Kraft, Dirk Price, Julie Tappendorf, and I will be talking about using your powers for good, tips for uniting your board. And then the next week at the APA Illinois State Conference, David Silverman, Greg Jones, and Trevor Dick from the city of Aurora, we're going to be going on APA Illinois' excellent planning law adventure, talking about planning law to planners. It's one of my favorite things to do. Before we go, I want to remind everyone to subscribe. Leave us a review wherever good podcasts are heard. We prefer good reviews. Email us your questions and ideas at podcast@anselglenk.com. And, of course, you can find us online at quorumforum.anselglenk.com. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All in favor, the ayes have it. We'll see you next time on Ansel Glenk's Quorum Forum podcast.